Show.
Head On with Bob Kincaid. 3 hours of conversation, cussing, and a discussing with America's only born and bred Southern liberal talk host. Head On with Bob Kincaid is brought to you each night by Coal River Mountain Watch. Coal River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of a sustainable future, part of the uprising against mountaintop removal. Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Bicod, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy! All right, we're out of the nest and flapping our little wings and flying high in Denver. Our first 3 hours of live coverage from the convention hall already in the can. Thank you, Guy James. Thank you, Mark Levine. I think we have a magnificent week ahead of us. It's gonna be very, very exciting. And I am so very glad that Guy and Mark could be out there to do this, to show the world what independent media looks like and sounds like. Because that's exactly what we're about, as independent as you can get as far as a radio operation is concerned. And you couldn't ask for two bigger pros than Guy James and Mark Levine there in the skybox. At the Pepsi Center in Denver, front and center. Look, they got the best view in the building. Oh, it's amazing. And there's a lot of stuff to talk about tonight. Your calls, of course, are always welcome.
President, the world can root for.
And I just wanted to check in real quick. I'd like to go ahead and take us, Mark highly recommended the remarks by Andy Tobias. And so we're going to go to that right now.
Because, boy, do we ever need a change.
Ladies and gentlemen, please welcome Alice Travis-Dumont, Secretary of the Democratic National Committee.
Okay, let's don't say we didn't. Darn. I guess we're moving. Are you heading out, Mark? You got a second? I don't know.
I'm going to switch over the feed. Guy needs to take his equipment back. I was going to tell you about that, but I got a second. Go ahead.
Yeah. Well, I just I guess we're hitting the really staccato part of the part of the process where, you know, everybody gets 2.5 minutes and
that's exactly right. By the way, Tobias gave a really nice speech. It's interesting. He's known mostly today for his business acumen. He's someone who made millions of dollars and, of course, has donated very, very generously to the Democratic Party. But he's written a lot of financial self-help books. A lot of people don't know about his earlier coming out book. It's just very interesting to me that that's how he's known. Anyway, he just gave us, just so you know, so people wonder what they missed, in his 2-minute speech, and it was very short, he did talk about the fact that Democrats are better for business, that the stock market goes up when Democrats are in control, that because the Democrats are good stewards of the economy, actually people do better off.
And that makes perfect sense, Mark, because what you get under a Republican economy is the boom and bust cycle.
Right.
Because that's exactly. And they don't know anything about stability. I wanted to let you and let the listeners know that apparently the video, the Ken Burns documentary on Ted Kennedy's life is going to roll at 9:15 p.m. Eastern time. So, you know, we'll try to take that audio, too. I assume you'll be back by then.
Very hard trying to get you video. I need to cut out now, Bob, because Guy needs to go, and I need to switch the equipment over a little bit. So I need to cut out, leave you to your show. I will get you back the live feed of the convention in just a few minutes, but I need the time for the transition.
Right. Go get him, Tiger.
All right. Thanks, Bob.
This, I don't know about you, but this just amazes me. The idea that you could take the disparate elements that are the horn and out of that build such monumentally good coverage is just it's thrilling, isn't it? So, of course, it's Monday. We haven't really chatted since the great big vice presidential announcement was made. And your thoughts on that are, of course, welcome. You know the phone number, 443-877-443-2366, 877, the numeral 4, head on. That's on our nickel. If you want to do it on your nickel, you got an unlimited dialing, long-distance dialing plan or something like that, free minutes, whatever. 304-658-3333 is, of course, the number that you would use. And everything, all topics are wide open. If that's what, regardless of what you want to talk about, I'm okay with. Look, I'm okay. I'm really, really okay with the Biden choice as the running mate. Now, I saw the nattering nabobs of negativity out there. Well, so much for change. He's been in the Senate for 36 years and no change. No, I think it is a change because, among other things, you can count on Joe Biden to say what he means and mean what he says. You know, yesterday was National Waffle Day, August the 24th. It's the commemoration of the patenting of the waffle iron. And so I think it's kind of fitting because John McCain is the quintessential waffler. I mean, they painted John Kerry as a flip-flopper? Okay, well, okay, you'll call John Kerry, they'll call John Kerry the flip-flopper. Nah, okay, so we're going to suggest that the policy positions of the McCain campaign come straight from the Waffle House, and they are, baby, scattered, smothered, and covered. Those of you who have dined at the Waffle House will know what that means. So, I'm okay with Biden. You know, and you know, one of the things they're going to come out with, and they're going to say, well, he's the senator for MasterCard. And yeah, the bankruptcy bill was just a miserable piece of crap. And maybe that's something we can fix in a Democratic administration with a Democratic Congress. Maybe we can go back and fix the death sentence that was welfare reform. That'd be nice. But you know, they say no. What I was saying, they say that Biden is from the credit card industry. I saw a number over the course of his Senate career, some 36 years, he has received about $220,000 from the credit card industry in Delaware and points elsewhere. You do the math. That ain't 10 grand a year. And frankly, as political gravy ladling is concerned, that's pretty slim pickings. Seriously, he is the unrichest member of the Senate? No, really, not kidding. You know, you got Obama just made his first million, just got done paying off his student loans, and you've got the unrichest member of the United States Senate. I'm okay with that. I would be having a real hard time getting excited about Tim Kaine or Evan Bayh or Hillary. But I got no problem. No, because Biden will go out there, and just as he did on Saturday in Springfield, he will tear off John McCain's ass and hand it to him and say, is this yours? And frankly, it's about damn time we had somebody that can do that. We don't need any more principled discussions that involve 9-syllable words. By God, we need people, and I think Joe Biden is one of them, who will go out and just, you know, punch McCain and whatever little rat bastard he picks, punch him right in the face. And here, this is you. We didn't say this. You said this. You eat it. And I'm looking forward to that, not just because it's wrestling, but Lord God, because I'm so tired of us saying, well, you know, we're going to be above that. We're not going to play like that. I don't know. So, they take a swing at Joe Biden. I think Joe Biden will take two swings back. So I'm more than okay with that. So let's not waste any time. Let's go straight to the phones. Hey, welcome to the program.
Hey, Bob, it's Kevin.
Hey, Kevin, how's it going?
Going great. I'm getting ready to go out to dinner soon, but I just want to touch base with you. Chris Matthews, I'm beginning to believe he is a certifiable bigot because he brings up such minute things about, you know, the whole black father thing an hour ago. And I'm like, this guy is an ass.
Oh, certifiable, yeah. And I think he's a little bit loony. I think there's one of those Star Trek worms that got in his ear and is eating his brain because, you know, the furrow in the trousers and... hey. Yeah, so, no, I think you're absolutely correct.
Yeah, you know, it's like, what does that have to do with him running for president? You know, he's a family man. He's made. That's it.
But you see, they've got to get around all of that because if you compare Barack Obama's family values with John McCain's, McCain ain't got a chance.
Oh God!
By his own admission,
the guy who abandoned the family.
Right.
And I'm willing to bet you they're not going to bring up the issue of in the Republican convention about fathers leaving their family because McCain did it.
Oh, and but it's not just Chris Matthews, Kevin. It's also people like Flimball. His thing today was to, my friends, I'm almost certain that Michelle Obama is pregnant. Well, yeah. What if she is? They're married? I mean, you know.
They have sex. They, you know.
It happens.
Unlike your marriage.
Yeah, right. Yeah, to your cat, 24,000 square foot mansion, live with a cat. Yeah. There's some family values.
That's a picture, you know.
You know, boys only vacations with dummied up scripts for Viagra to an island nation known for pedophilic sex traffic. Yeah, okay.
Family values.
But you know, so the last big hurrah is now waiting to see just what sort of a loser old 894 will choose. And I guess the inside tracks with Romney, and I'm like, oh, please, Jesus, let it be Romney. Because you can just hear that. Well, no, I want it to be Romney because you can hear all the fundies just shutting their door and locking it. And, well, no reason to go out and vote now.
No, because as long as they're Republican, and this is, you know, it's funny. I read Kitty Kelly's The Family about the House of Bush.
Oh, I did too, yeah.
And remember what she said, and this is how they think. As long as you can do something for them, they will always be open-minded. Like, there was a member of one of the Bush family's friends who have AIDS, who's gay and have AIDS. And, you know, Poppy Bush wrote a nice long letter, you know, saying da-da-da-da-da. But, yeah, this is one of the most anti-homophobic administrations. You know, labeling it as a gay disease and all that. So, you know, when it comes to their little clique, they show all the compassion in the world.
Oh, sure, they got it right. Well, unless, of course, you're counting Barbara Bush back when she and Poppy went and played golf the day they buried their little girl, but...
Well,
yeah. Nice bunch, them. Four? Now why? Yeah, and it comes down all the way to George the Second. Yeah, we're gonna kick your butts in Iraq. Now watch this drive. Four.
Yeah.
Oof.
And did you see the Chris Matthews show when he went to the Republican side of the thing and that woman, that the suburban housefrau, saying how Barack, he's a Muslim, he went to a madrasa in Indonesia, you know, just ginning up.
Oh, I know. And look, you know, the Puma people are doing it, too. This stupid little lawsuit that was filed in Philadelphia challenging Obama's citizenship,
mm-hmm.
saying that he lost his American citizenship when he lived in Indonesia as a child.
If you're born here, you're an American.
Yeah.
Unless you formally renounce your citizenship.
Oh, here. But the freakery. Oh, Kevin, the freakery is absolutely coming out of the woodwork. I saw one of those Obama haters say that...
No, just call them for what they are, bigots.
Well, okay, yeah, a bigot. I saw a comment by one of them saying that... well, you know the business with the text message, right?
Yeah.
The Biden text message went out around 3 a.m. Eastern Time.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, I saw a comment early this morning saying... Well, he just released that text message at 3 a.m. as a snub, as an insult to Hillary over the 3 a.m. phone call business. And I was talking with John Fox earlier today, and he goes, Jesus, Bob, do these idiots not know that there's more than one time zone? It was only 3 a.m. in one time zone. But lo and behold, there they are. It's a snub to Hillary.
Why is that? Put it to you this way. If McCain wins, I would be formally because I don't want to be associated with a country that where the people are this stupid.
Like I keep saying, this ain't an election. This is a national IQ test, Kevin.
You got that right.
You know, and it's a, you know, if we elect Obama, it'll show that we are of reasonable and average intelligence.
Yeah.
If we elect old 894, the guy who's actually dumber than Bush, it'll show that, you know, basically America collectively should not be allowed outside without its helmet and knee pads and shoulder pads on.
Yeah. And a leather helmet.
I know. Yeah, it just is. So there you go. But so where are you off to dinner tonight?
I'm going to a restaurant, a French restaurant.
Oh, very nice.
Yeah.
Life and civilization. Order something with a really good cream sauce on it and think of me. Around here we call cream sauce gravy.
Oh, that ain't so bad. I've had some of your biscuits and gravy.
Oh, yeah, some of them big old cat head biscuits.
Yeah.
Well, have fun, Kevin. Good to hear from you, brother.
Okay, then.
All right, we'll talk to you later.
Okay.
Bye now. Dinner at a French restaurant. Well, so there's that. And I don't know if Mark's got the audio back up yet. But Mark will be filling in, by the way, tonight and tomorrow night at least, for Peter Godbold in the Strictly Confidential slot, mainly because, Hurricane Faye was not kind to Peter Godbold. And now there's another one brewing in the Gulf. It looks like it could get real interesting. What's the next one? Gustav? Is that it? Peter points out, Bob, I was reading McCain is 5'7" tall and is suffering from short man syndrome. No insult to our short listeners intended. Yeah, but I think I mentioned that maybe on Friday night show. They said, wow, you know, Dennis Kucinich is too short to be president. He's the same height as old 894. I mean, when the debates go down, they will have to do something to cheat his height. I don't know if he'll stand on a box or they'll shoot him from a different angle. And by shoot, I mean, you know, with a camera, video. Calm down, Agent Fred. It's okay. Everything's going to be all right, Agent Fred. So I don't know what they'll do, but they'll have to neutralize that, because otherwise it'll look like Barack Obama is debating what is it? Dopey, sleepy, sleazy, hateful. One of those dwarfs. Because he's a little bitty guy, and he's got a belly full boatload of the attitude. Peter, you're just evil. Let him stand on Barbara Bush. Oi. But that's where it's headed. So tonight, I don't know. I'm really excited with the convention stuff. I know some people aren't. But until you've been around one of those things, you just don't. I mean, it is an electric atmosphere. And apparently the Recreate 68 people had their march in downtown Denver. And it literally scared a timid, tepid little white dude reporter for Fox News out of 5 years' growth. That's some fun audio that we might get to. Our buddy Philip has it up on his website over at his Live Journal blog. And the website is PRACUEL.livejournal.com. we'll run that here in a couple of minutes or so. But first, we will go right back to the phones. Hey, welcome to the program.
Hey, Bob.
Hey, Juanita. How are you, dear?
I'm fine. How are you?
You know, the only way it could possibly be any better is if I was in the Pepsi Center with Guy and Mark.
Okay.
But I will get over my green-eyed monster.
Well, I was relieved about the vice president. And I had my son was over, and I had we listened to some of the things that they had where he was really talking about John McCain.
Mm-hmm.
And it was just thoroughly enjoyable.
Oh, the
so
business.
Maybe we got our scrapper.
I think we may. That line about what was it? John McCain doesn't know which of the seven kitchen tables he'd sit around. That's beautiful.
I don't remember that one. That's a good one.
Yeah, and it was a lovely setup too, because Biden went through this whole thing about how, you know how it is, you sit down at the kitchen table at the end of the day, and the kids have been fed and they're asleep, and you're sitting there at the kitchen table and you're discussing your problems and you're discussing, you know, what's going to happen and how things are going. And we make our decisions around the kitchen table and then just, you know, two count, you know, beat, beat. Well, John McCain has a little bit of a problem because he doesn't know which of his seven kitchen tables he'd sit around.
Well, he also doesn't know how to pump gas.
Well, is that surprising? It's not surprising
no.
to me that a guy wouldn't know how to pump gas when he doesn't, when he barely knows he owns a car. John McCain doesn't live in this world.
No. He must have everything done for him.
Well, and I think that really is next. Come on, Juanita, there's seven houses and several more condominiums. You can't tell me that somewhere along the way there's not going to be a couple of undocumented aliens doing the lawn care.
Well, you know, also, Cindy doesn't know how many sisters she has.
No, she doesn't. Right.
I think she has a brother, too.
And now she's off on a road trip.
A road trip?
Mm-hmm. She's
what doing?
Well, she's going to go over to Georgia and report back to her husband on the crisis there. Yeah.
Well, I thought it already sent the wonderful duo.
Condi and Carl?
No, Joe and Graham.
Oh, Joe, yeah, but I think there's got to be some follow-up stuff, so that's why she's going.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
Although I have they're the McCains, so there's every chance in the world she'll land in, you know, turn left at the Big Chicken and land in Marietta.
Yeah.
Cindy, wrong Georgia.
He also doesn't know what kind of car he has.
Right, exactly. I don't know why people don't, well, I mean, some, not this audience, but there's a lot of people out there that I say, listen, this guy's going to make George Bush look smart.
Yeah.
And they go, nah, couldn't happen, couldn't happen. Nobody's dumber than Bush. Oh, yeah, oh, yeah.
Who would have thought it? And who would have thought who it was? But I'd already lost any kind of respect I had for this guy when he started snoodling up to Bush.
Well, and I lost respect for him in 2000 when he wouldn't even defend his own wife and his own child when the Bush family sleazed and slimed him over. You know.
Oh yeah, yeah. Well, that was the build up to it, you know, and then him turn around and well, maybe he is a Manchurian candidate. I think him and Joe Lieberman both are. Got something different about them, you know, like something is not right.
Well, which would you
have that grin on their face?
Yeah, like a fox eating out of a wire brush, exactly.
Yeah.
Well, which do you think would be the bigger gift to the Democrats as a running mate, Romney or Lieberman?
Lieberman, I think's got a little bit of sense left. I don't think. I don't think talking about not knowing something. be interesting to see how many houses he has that he knows about. I don't know.
Well, it's true. And then there's Romney out there driving around with the family dog screaming and begging for mercy up on top of the car as they go from Massachusetts to Canada. Romney's a gift.
He's not right up there.
Yeah, I'm sure he did.
Uh-huh.
You ever hung on for dear life on top of a station wagon? It's a real hoot, Juanita, I can promise you.
Right, poor doggy. I do feel a lot better about him, because I said, thank God it wasn't bye. I just had a fear of it being bye. I said, almost anybody but bye.
Well, bye and Kane both just filled me with it's like negative number mathematics how unenthused I would have been. But this guy we can have. Look, political campaigns are stressful enough as it is. If somebody can make it a little, lighten it up a little bit along the way by skewering and zinging the other side, more power to them. And you know, I don't think Obama. I'm just pure speculation. I don't think Obama will have any problem turning Biden loose either.
I don't either.
And sooner or later, he'll get McCain good,
because
this business of, you know, I think Luke mentioned it on the show the other night.
That thing about the house is real. The houses are really is going around about. It's really going to affect, I believe.
Well, I hope it does, Juanita, because it's only fair because they, you know, they practically crucified poor John Kerry over the same issue.
Oh yeah.
So, you know, welcome to payback, and paybacks are hell. That's fine. That's fine by me. Let's wear them out. I mean, just wear them to pieces.
Which one do you think would be the greatest gift to us?
Right now, I got to think it's Romney. Because, see, the evangelical fundies, they'll forgive Lieberman for being Jewish. Because they'll just say he needs some perfecting, you know, that's what Pastor Hagee says, and any friend of a Pastor Hagee's a friend of mine, that kind of stuff. I think Romney's the bigger gift.
Yeah.
Because Romney would, all the fundies, really, what I said earlier, you can hear the doors locking. They ain't going to go out and vote for no Mormon. They ain't Christians.
Right.
And you know as well as I do, Juanita, that is the prevailing attitude.
Yep.
And frankly, you know, I mean, the way I am about religion, anybody can believe anything they want to, as long as they're not trying to make me believe it with them. That's my take on it. But Romney would turn off the fundamentalist evangelical voting base. I mean, like a light switch. He'd turn it off, and the fundies would be in bed before the room got dark. Yeah. So he's a gift, you know. Plus, the guy's name is Willard. If we start using his real name.
Willie?
Yeah, John McCain and Willard Romney. Willard. That's just a creepy name. Sorry, I hope there's no Willards in our audience, but it's kind of, you know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
So I like that. And, you know, I'm still holding out hope for Mike Huckstaby, radical fundamentalist cleric Mike Huckstaby, as a sort of a long shot dark horse.
Well, I'm kind of afraid of him because I think that he's a guy that he's got that preacher-itis stuff. And
well, see, that's the thing. Exactly, Juanita. I think he would actually prove a fitting and decent opponent to somebody like Biden.
Well, he's smart, what I call a preacheritis is, you know, stretching things. He'll switch over, and that's the code, you know, to the religious right. So, he's our guy, you know.
Exactly. I think if McCain actually nominated Huckstaby to be his vice president.
Mm-hmm.
It would be more trouble to us than anybody else that's been mentioned.
That's what I'm trying to say. Yeah. I think so.
Because Dobson and all the weirdos and Kenneth Copeland and the creepies and and all the right-wing evangelical fundies, they would. They'd come. They'd come out to vote for a ticket that had Huckabee on it, like bugs
right.
coming out from under the baseboards.
Right, and the people that don't know about this, you know, religious right thing, they don't really understand it. I don't think a lot of people don't. They don't know how dangerous he could be.
So it sounds like we've dodged him, but until he names Pawlenty or Romney or Lieberman or one of those creeps, I'm not going to feel like we're safe from Huckabee.
Right. But, like I said, I'm going to be praying about it.
Well, I think you're probably well advised to do so. But, Juanita, it's awful good to hear from you. And,
good to hear from you, too.
Keep him hatches batting down, because Gustav looks like he could get ugly,
and
too.
You know what? I was going to watch The View today, and then I completely forgot about it.
You're...
I completely forgot. I don't know if they were rerun again, but this would be 3 weeks if they were.
They got to be back, and, you know,
I completely forgot it.
Don't lay down on the job, because it might get kind of interesting this week, what with
yeah.
the convention going on.
Yeah. Okay, well, you take care.
All right, you have a great night, Juanita.
And enjoying the convention. It brings my daddy back to me.
Oh, wonderful. All right, you take care now.
Okay, bye-bye.
View correspondent and our pal in Central Florida, Juanita. Just kind of checking to see how Mark's doing with the setup there. No audio at all. Well, that kind of bites. But we'll have it back in due time. So, no, it is true. I wasn't pulling your leg. Cindy McCain is flying off to Georgia. No, I'm sorry, not Georgia, the other Georgia. The one with the capital that's all consonants and no vowels. But why? I mean, is this some sort of a contest? I don't know. So, you know, well, the one thing we know for sure is that nothing will be accomplished by her visit. Maybe she'll bring back some lovely scarves or some fabulous shoes. Or she's not going to do anything, because that's not the role of a pig-licking wife. All right, back to the phones. Hey, welcome to the program.
Well, how you doing there?
Hey, David, what's up?
Yeah, I haven't checked in a little bit, so thought I'd check in your program. Just add something that I thought was pretty hilarious. Apparently, John McCain has a rapper endorsement.
Oh, this I gotta hear.
Yeah, it's a rapper by the name of Daddy Yankee. And he's part of the genre called reggaeton, which is came out of the Latin communities, mixes reggae and a lot of Hispanic elements, and it's really popular in the Latin communities. But I guess McCain didn't vet the guy because he has a history of saying stuff that he's a gangster, and it's almost as bad as the Ludacris thing. And the fact that McCain stood right next to this guy, you better say something quick to avoid whatever. I mean, he did a video. Daddy Yankee did a video with Snoop Dogg, so you can already see the train wreck that this is about to happen.
Now, you told me he had a rapper. I thought it was going to be something like Notorious D-U-L-L.
No. Daddy Yankee is actually pretty popular with the female audience and the
Hep Cat Nito groovy set.
No, more so the club type kids, the kids who want to listen to the radio and just want to be cool and just whatever's hot at the moment, flavor of the month. He's like that, and what he says is definitely signs of somebody desperate for attention and completely pathetic in every, I mean, they have every single Daddy Yankee fan in back of him, and they're getting all excited just to hug him, and it's like, they're not here for you, McCain, they're here for Daddy Yankee. But yeah, if you go to rodstory.com, you can see it there. It's a sight to behold. They have the footage from CNN. So a lot of people have already posted it up on YouTube, and they're pretty much everywhere. So I think McCain is stuck with Daddy Yankee, so he has to reject him in about, I'd give it about 10 more minutes.
Yeah, I don't want him to just reject him. Now, I mean, it's sauce for the goose, it's sauce for the gander, David. He doesn't just have to reject him, he has to apologize.
Yeah, that's what I mean by reject, apologize, and all of that.
Poppy in the chat room's telling me that McCain called Daddy Yankee a, my friends, he's a real American success story.
Yeah.
That's nice.
Like I said, he has a language that is as offensive as ludicrous, and Kanye West and Jay-Z and Snoop Dogg and all of that. So if they want to, the Democratic blogs, they better get on board and post that up as much as they can and come up with examples, because there it is. There's your moment for attack right there.
Oh, that'll be, frankly, that'll be fun if it sticks.
Well, I think it's...
Especially after the ABBA comments. Did you catch that business, David?
No, I didn't catch it.
Well, remember how McCain said in his book that when he was interrogated, he gave away the names of the Green Bay Packers, but then when he was in Pittsburgh, he said he gave away the names of the Pittsburgh Steelers defensive line, that kind of stuff. Well, he's making crap up again. I got a heads up today from our buddy Clyde over at WD40.com. And lo and behold, it was a segment from David Schuster on Hardball showing McCain audio and McCain defending his choice of ABBA being his very most favoritist rock and roll band in the world. And then the footage of McCain saying, well, my friends, my taste in music sort of stopped when my aircraft collided with a missile. No, really, he used the POW thing, David, as justification for why he likes ABBA. When my aircraft collided with a missile in 1967. You know, there's only one problem. His favorite song is Dancing Queen by ABBA, which was released in, 1978? 77?
McCain doesn't want to be typecast with the disco era. I thought he was going to say something like, my friends, I was just turned on to this new music called Skiffle. what you know?
I heard this thing the other day, my friends, called the Charleston, and I want you to know that it is the bee's knees. I guess it's no fair picking on McCain like that, is it?
But, you know, the thing about Biden that I just want to say real clearly is the fact that, you know, I wish people would, this is an example kind of like a biasism or just, you know, that's politics. But the fact that Biden said, you know, for vice president, I'd like to be McCain or Obama's. I think they would be great candidates. Or something to that effect. And to me, it's just like, I have a little bit of misgiving for that because he didn't have to say that. It kind of makes me look at him sideways. I understand his politics and all that, but keep saying you're friends with McCain. And I start to put like red flags in my mind a little bit.
Well, ELO from the chat room is pointing out that it took John McCain twice as long to learn about Martin Luther King Jr. as it did for him to learn about ABBA.
Well, there you go. Like I said, I think that's the one thing that concerns me with Biden, of like how much he's actually going to stand up for people in general, and I know we're not going to get that much and all of that, and it's more of the same, but the good news is less of McCain, but I don't know, I mean, I don't know if he's enough to excite excitement. And then also there's the thing of what Hillary is going to say, if she's actually going to say we need to unite, which I don't think she is going to say that. I think what
she's already said it.
Oh, she has?
Yeah, she said, we are a united party. Make no mistake. Anybody who voted for me has much more in common with Barack Obama than they do with John McCain. Yeah, she said that.
Well, I guess sort of going in that direction, but I don't know. I mean, again, I just look at the way people's stance are during this election, and it just seems to me like, well, we're going to go with Hillary, and we're going to go with Obama, and then a lot of people don't want to, you know, they still have that basic separate stance to each other and distant, and I don't know, it just seems to me.
I get what you're going at. But, you know, Hillary's going to talk tomorrow night at the convention. And then they'll have their little roll call vote on Wednesday. And, you know, listen, like I said, I have been to one of these before. And it's electric, but it's supposed to be a celebration of the party itself. You know what I mean? It's not supposed to be, in the current age, a place of controversy. It's the party putting its best foot forward. So I'm hoping that they manage to do that.
Yeah, I hear what you're saying, but it's just oh, one more thing. Have you heard any updates on the protest? If anyone's getting out of hand or anything?
The only thing I saw was that wonderfully silly Fox footage.
Yeah, I guess it's still early in the week for a protest. But yeah, I don't know. It should be interesting to see what happens. I did post up a link if people want to pay attention. I did post a link on the head-on forum of the police scanner, so people can check the police scanners if they want.
Well, David, good to hear from you, brother.
All right.
We'll talk to you soon.
All right, later.
Daddy Yankee, right?
Yeah, Daddy Yankee. And I'm serious about the police scanner. I did post it up.
Cool. All right.
All right.
Later, man.
Later.
Bye. Pop culture correspondent David calling in from Maine. And sorry, I'm doing two things at one time. Oh, darn it. Hold on a minute. Mark's having some technical problems out in the course of switching over his equipment, and I have to give him some data. Just one second, please. No, it's the glory. Look, it's the glory of independent. Independent broadcasting. Okay, well, you know, this is all part of doing this on the fly. So, and by the way, I don't know if you heard Guy mention it earlier, but he and Mark are not too terribly far from where that miserable excuse of a life support system for a hairdo, Sean Hannity job is broadcasting, and our alert listener David in Tennessee tuned some of that in just to see what he was saying earlier today. And what the Hannity job said was, I'm broadcasting live from the Are You a Bitter American convention. Why do we have to... Okay. I'm all free speech. Sure. I'm there. But why do we have to let the dicks broadcast from our convention? That godforsaken freak Neil Bortz is down in the basement of the Pepsi Center. Guy James is commuting to the event with a right wing gas bag from Atlanta. Yeah, I can't imagine as a liberal, as a progressive, you know, otherwise known as a decent human being, I can't imagine wanting to go to the Repiglican convention.
Ew.
I mean, I just feel constantly like I had to go and take a shower. It's nasty. So instead, you know, that's happening next weekend. Or that's happening Labor Day-ish. Labor Day weekend, we've got some fun plans. The whole fam, Damily and I, are going to load up and go down into the Coal River Valley to a friend's house, and we're hopefully going. And I was talking with her earlier today, and get a bunch of people together, hopefully, and have a big apple butter making. So that should be some seriously good fun, because here we have an antique apple butter kettle and the frame that it goes on, big brass affair. And we're going to make us up some apple butter and have a darn fine time. Can it up and stuff, and it'll be yummy. You ever had apple butter? Is that one of those southern things? I don't know. I don't know if apple butter is big in other parts of the country. But mercy. Apple butter on a homemade biscuit, a little bit of butter itself. Oh. Of course, I have to forego the butter and the biscuit, but I'll have, you know, a spoonful of the apple butter. Sure, why not? But it's a fascinating process if you've never been around it. You know, big old open fire and the big old, I mean, we're talking about, and then there's this paddle. You have to stir it constantly or it'll scorch, and that sucks. And there's this big old paddle that you use from about 10 feet out, and you just have to stir it constantly until it turns and then becomes something absolutely wonderful. It should be a real adventure, because Lorella's never made it before, and frankly, neither have I. Watched my grandmother do it, but that was a long time ago. So we'll see how that goes. It should be a lot of fun. Speaking of traveling on or about Labor Day, Labor Day season, 1st of September. Oh yeah, okay, Poppy, he's in Indiana. We love apple butter here, but well, you should, Poppy, because what's his name? John Chapman, Johnny Appleseed. Some of his original orchards are still, I think, in existence in Ohio and Indiana, so that would make sense. Interesting that the apple trees that John Chapman really, you know, there really was a Johnny Appleseed. The apple trees that he transported for those early orchards were absolutely not fit for eating apples, but they were great, great, great cider-making apples, so that the pioneers on the frontier could make cider and at least get a face on from time to time. Our pal Cindy out in the Great Northwest said, who invited the thugs to our convention? She said, Steve said he saw a report on one of the morning shows at 4 a.m. where they stuck a microphone in a Republican's face and asked, who invited you here? And the pig-licking reporter said, we invited ourselves, smirk, smirk. You know, he said he thought it was CBS. Well, we want the coverage, and we want it badly enough that we will bow and scrape to the likes of the Hannity job or Neil Bortz. You know, that guy's last name just sounds like something that happens when your dinner disagrees with you. Bortz! But that's me, and I'm mean. But anyway, no, some traveling plans for the weekend. We're going to go do the apple butter making. And somebody else really doesn't want to have just a whole lot to do with the Repig Lickin' convention either, and that would be Richard B. Dick Big Time Cheney. He's going to be a traveling man. Yes, indeedy. He'll give a little address at the right wing con in Minneapolis. But he's going to have to get on the plane on Air Force Two and go do the people's business, traveling to Georgia. Yeah, again, that Georgia, the trouble spot, the one with the guns and the bombs and the people laying dead in the road. It's a broader visit to key partners in Europe and Asia. Got to wonder when that one got put together, don't you? Was it before or after everything went south in Georgia? Because see, this is a, you know, this is another Georgia, and I don't. How am I? How much of America knows this? How much of America knows the extent and the degree to which we manufactured this horror there? You know, we armed the Georgians to the teeth, and everything. A lot of it has to do with a business deal concerning, how about that, oil pipelines. And then the Georgians went in to pacify a breakaway province called South Ossetia. And the Russians responded by attacking until the attack was no longer continuable. So, but it was our doing. A senior administration official said Cheney's trip had been planned before the Russia-Georgia conflict. Yeah, sure it was. Sure it was. Let's see. Cheney's also getting in some valuable and important visiting time with the leaders of Azerbaijan, Ukraine, and Italy. And he's going to address the annual Ambrosetti Forum in Lake Como in northern Italy. Lord, they really had to scramble around to find somewhere for him to go, didn't they? Azerbaijan? Yeah, well, you know, I mean, it's early September is political visiting season in Azerbaijan. It's an old and well-established tradition. Sure. His job there is going to be to reiterate U.S. commitment to Georgia. And talk with the Georgian president, Saakashvili, on common security interests. White House Deputy Press Secretary Tony Fratto said the president felt it was important to have the vice president consult with allies in the region on our common security interests. I'm guessing the president felt that immediately after the Republican National Committee felt that it needed to make a phone call saying, you know, listen, you two toxic, poisonous jerks, stay away from the convention. I mean, show your faces and then get out. Now, George, it's not necessary for you to stand there and hand the roses off like it's some sort of Miss America pageant. Don't you? I mean, isn't there some brush needs cut in Crawford? And can't you send that? Can't you send that bionic freak off to Georgia? Ain't you a good idea? I'll do that. Well, okay. Here's Cossack, our buddy the Cossack, says. Biden was one of the worst possible choices for vice president. Why not Barbara Boxer? Biden, lest we forget, was one of the most vocal proponents of Bush's debacle in Iraq. Biden has yet to meet a foreign entanglement. He isn't four square four. He was shoulder to shoulder with McCrazy and pushing for landing ground troops in Serbia, for God's sakes. Biden, the MasterCard and credit company whore, was, of course, instrumental in pushing through the credit card-authored bankruptcy bill. Yeah, Biden's the icon for Washington corruption at its best. Biden is emblematic of old-style Washington. After all, he's one of the few legislators who was there concomitant with Nixon. Okay, I get all that. Who then? The list was down to Bi, Kaine, and Biden. Kaine's the kind of guy where if a Republican said something nasty about him, you get the idea that he might cry. Bi, I don't know if Evan Bi even has a pulse. Okay? So it came down to those three. Pick from those three. You can't choose choice D, I want a pony. That's not there. Barbara Boxer would have been fine by me. And we don't know, but what maybe Barbara Boxer was asked, and she said, no way, I'm not interested. No, thank you. We don't know. Russ Feingold would have been fine with me. There's a few people. You know, Jack Reed from Rhode Island, who is not terribly, not exactly setting the world on fire with his stunning oratory, would have been okay because he's got the creds. He's got the some halfway decent progressive creds. Now, Biden has apologized for his Iraq vote and said he wished he had not made it. That's a far cry more than Senator Clinton did. And frankly, that's one of the things that cost Senator Clinton the nomination, I would warrant. Biden does have his connections to the credit card industry, and he did do the wrong thing on the bankruptcy bill. He didn't just do the wrong thing, he led the wrong thing because he led that fight. But he is deemed to have... And look, this is also... Well, wait, we're going to do this after... we'll do this after the top of the hour. Talk about this a little bit if you guys want to. Because I've had some stuff boiling around in my brain on the issue of the vice presidency and the history and everything. And we can talk about that. But what do you do? What are you going to do? This is your holiday. This is Labor Day coming up. This is the only holiday that is dedicated to the people who actually work their asses off and carry this country on their back. This holiday coming up next weekend is the holiday that is dedicated to the people who make the exalted lives of the dirty, vile pigs like Richard Biedek, Big Time Cheney's life possible. What are you going to do with it? How are you going to celebrate Labor Day? Dick's celebrating Labor Day a little bit late by flying off, what do they call it here, to consult with allies in the region on our common security interests. In other words, he's going to go to Georgia and pat some hands and tell, you know, give them that laurel and hearty handshake. Goodbye, Dick. See you later. So we'll take a little break and come back. This is America's liberal voice, America's listener-supported liberal voice, and your home for independent media coverage of the Democratic National Convention. This is The Horn. Chime on in if you want to. 877-443-2366, 304-658-3333.
So he's leaving the life he's come to know. Ooh.
He said he's going.
He said he's going back to find.
Going back to find.
Ooh, ooh, ooh. What's left of his world? The world he left behind. Not so long. But he so found out the hard way that dreams don't always come true. Oh, no. So he burned all his hopes. And even so, his old car bought a one-way ticket back to the life he once knew. Oh, yes, he did. He said he would. Oh, he's leaving.
It's your second hour in the Liberal Sandbox, and you're head-on with Bob Kincaid.
Number two underway, 3.5 minutes past the hour, 7 o'clock here on the East Coast, and whatever time it says down in the corner of your computer screen, wherever you are. You know, radio guys giving time checks actually used to mean something, because, you know, your signal be going, I wonder when he's going to give the time. I got to break myself of that. But it's just part of the zeitgeist of this, I guess.
It's time to come back from break. That's what time it is, Bob.
Thank you, Agnes. Agnes is taking care of me during the show, making sure that I have my my evening's allotment of sweet tea to get me through the program. Yeah. I don't have any. I don't have any glue to huff or anything. So. Get through one way or the other. That's a joke. Come on, it's a joke. So, by the way, some stuff out there that's, while the convention's going on, it is easy to get wrapped up in that and the hoopla. And that's not me being critical. It's hoopla. Lord, you know, to have been there in 1988 in Atlanta and seen Ann Richards deliver that poor George monologue, God, it was precious. Poor George, he can't help it. He was born with a silver foot in his mouth. And to hear those thousands of people inside the Omni in Atlanta just absolutely erupt, it's hoopla and it's exciting. And it's a lot of fun too. And there are a lot of people out there, hopefully, talking about serious issues. Although there are, I think I heard Guy say that there are some 200 humongous corporate parties going on. And I've seen something about how CNN's party room is the place to be for anyone who wants to blah, 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 blah. And, of course, we know that Air America Radio was throwing their big hoopla in the big tent in Denver. And I guess Arianna Huffington is swanning about. And there is something called the Stars Green Room, and it's going to have, I guess, celebrities in it. It really is a tremendous boatload of fun, exciting hoopla. But you know me. I don't know, maybe one of these days they'll put on as the epitaph on my stone, assuming there's a stone. They'll put the punchline from one of my favorite jokes. The one about the guy who dies and goes to hell. And the devil tells him they're all full up. There's only two rooms left. And he shows him the first room, and there's a bunch of people in there just moaning and groaning all for all eternity because they're standing on their heads on a concrete floor. And it just looks awful. Yeah, no fires or the brimstone or anything like that. Just a bunch of people standing on their heads for all eternity. And ow! God looks at the devil and says, yeah, I can't do that. He says, okay, one room left. And he opens the door and there's a bunch of people standing in the room knee-deep in caca drinking coffee. The guy goes, well, yeah, okay, I can do this. So he goes in to the eternal room, standing up to his knees in poo. He gets his first cup of coffee when a little demon comes in and yells, coffee breaks over, back on your heads. I love that joke. I think that would be a fitting thing to put on the coffee, put on my stone. Coffee breaks over, back on your head. And to a certain extent, that's also something that happens with me here. There's a lot of fun celebrity hoopla and a lot of glad-handing and stuff going on there, but it's hard for me to ignore the fact that the world continues apace despite the fabulousness that is going on. Now, what do I mean? Well, let's try a couple of different ones. This past Saturday, Afghan puppet president Hamid Karzai got all uppity and condemned a coalition airstrike in Afghanistan that killed 95 Afghan civilians. Killed. Okay, hold. We're having some technical difficulties in Denver that I have to address because I'm not just a show host. I'm a producer and tech guy, too. This is a heck of a way to do a show, isn't it? Hold on a minute. Let's just, before I go any further, let's see what's going to go, because we got to get this back up and running so that Mark can fill in for, Peter and, that we, so we can have the audio and so forth. So I'm going to have to find out what's going on here, and I'm waiting for Mark to type back to me. Oh, by the way, I don't know if you heard Guy mention it, but it is—it's true and it's really, really cool. We have exclusive music for the convention coverage, and it was composed by John Fox specifically for precisely this purpose. So while I try to tech out Mark Levine's tech problem, I'm going to roll that music and see if I can't get this stuff sorted out. Stand by, please. Sorry about this, but there's no way around it.
Let me spread my wealth around. I could learn.
Computer problems not solved. So I don't know if I'll get called away or not. I don't know what's going on with the rig out in Denver. But if I have to go away again, I have to go away again because we gotta get this working. But for the time being, we'll go back and pretend that I'm going to be here, and actually, it won't be all sideways. And just hope for the best. By the way, for those of you wanting to know, who you just heard was Rodney Crowell. That is an excellent album, and I played a track from it Friday night and thought you guys might enjoy The Obscenity Prayer this time through. The album, 2005, The Outsider, it's amazing, just stunning. Been listening to it all weekend long. I don't know if this gets any more sideways trying to sort out these tech problems in Denver. I may just have to take us all to Horseshoe Lake again. Yeah, that's our Monday song anyway, Will Kimbrough's Horseshoe Lake. And I'm about ready for that trip. Myself, for a variety of reasons. But let's see if I can pull my head back into the program for a second here and go back to what I was trying to focus on a few minutes ago. Letting go now, letting go now, letting everything go. It's going to be okay, Bob. It's going to be all right. This past Friday, there was an airstrike in southwestern Afghanistan that killed about 95 Afghan civilians. The village was Azizabad. It's in Herat province. It's one of the most deadly airstrikes. Well, it probably is nigh unto the deadliest airstrike on a civilian group in the 7 years that we have been unleashing hell on earth on those pitiful people. 95 Afghan civilians. And hey, here's the fun part. Here's the fun part for the pro-lifers in the audience. 50 of them were children. Congratulations, America. You paid to slaughter 50 babies. Maybe they was Taliban babies. You never know. Let's see. The coalition also slaughtered 27 civilians in a wedding party back on July the 6th. They were mostly women and children, too, including the bride. That was in eastern Afghanistan. So this was in western Afghanistan. You know, you got to have things balanced. Just like algebra, you got to balance the damned equation. So, in the midst of all the fun and the celebratory nature of the convention in Denver, I am at hazard not to remind myself, if no one else, myself, that there's a couple of really nasty, vile, evil, hellish little wars going on, sponsored by the new United States of America. One wonders what was going on to make the so-called coalition need to slaughter 95 people, including 50 children. Now, bear in mind, you never get quite the same story from the Pentagon. The Pentagon said that on Friday, coalition forces had come under attack in Azizabad. And they called in an airstrike that killed 25 militants, including Taliban leader Mullah Sadiq and 5 civilians. Oops. Major General Jeffrey J. Schlosser. Go to the Schlosser cutoff and get out of your car and cut off your Schlosser. Major General Jeffrey J. Schlosser, commander of coalition forces, ordered an investigation into the episode only after the Afghan government announced the civilian slaughter. The brass at Bagram Air Base issued a statement saying, coalition forces are aware of allegations that the engagement in the Shindand district of Herat province Friday may have resulted in civilian casualties. All allegations of civilian casualties are taken very seriously. Coalition forces make every effort to prevent the injury or loss of innocent lives. An investigation has been directed. But they were wiping out the Taliban, right? I mean, a lot of people go, oh, well, as long as we got some Taliban. There's only one problem. That problem's name is Colonel Rauf Ahmadi. He's the spokesman for the police chief of that region. And he said there were no Taliban there. There is no evidence to show there were Taliban there that night. Yeah, there's your death toll. 50 dead children, 19 dead women, and 26 dead men. The Afghan intelligence agency said no Taliban were present in the village that night. This is a New York Times story. A tribal elder from the region who helped bury the dead, his name being Haji Turjan Nurzai, said folks in the village were gathered. Oh, Jesus. They were gathered together to mark the anniversary of the death of a man who was anti-Taliban, who was killed last year. That's why the people were in the village. He said tribal enemies of the family had given out false information. This is just this explains so very much of why it is quite obvious the Americans bombed the area due to wrong information, Mr. Nourzai said. He continued, I am 100% confident that someone gave the information due to a tribal dispute. The Americans are foreigners, and they do not understand these people they killed were enemies of the Taliban. Well, the ones who survived aren't enemies of the Taliban anymore. Not that I would expect a Republican or a conservative to understand something like that. I wonder how much it cost to kill those 95 people. What's the bargain basement rate for slaughtering babies in airstrikes now? How much does a smart bomb cost? Or a dumb bomb, or any bomb, or a missile? How much is that? How much did it cost you? Can we measure that? Can we measure fractions that are that small? How much did it cost you, and how much did it cost me? I'm sure it was, tiny fractions of a penny to slaughter those 95 Afghans, or the 26 Afghans in July that were at a wedding. Just teeny tiny pieces of a penny. And that's kind of what helps things stay in perspective for me. It's what rather keeps things focused for me. Because here, this is plain. If old 894 and whatever freak he nominates for vice president get elected, there will be more and more and more of these news stories about wedding parties, anniversaries. And the slaughter of lots and lots of civilians. In fact, we may start actively slaughtering civilians in other countries. Because two wars is not enough for the Republican Party. We've got to have constant war all the time. And we like shiny new wars, too. Not these old, tiresome wars that we just can't seem to win and can't seem to get out of. No, we like a nice, shiny new war. Like I said, Dick Cheney's gone off to, instead of going to the Con, he's going to go off to the Azerbaijan and Georgia. See if we can't stir up a little bit more of a hornet's nest there. It's important what's going on in Denver. It's very important. It's important that there be enough energy generated there to propel Barack Obama and Joe Biden into the race itself. Because, we can say, Joe Biden, too much credit card, Joe Biden voted for the war, blah, 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 on and on and on and on. But you know what? He's a far cry from being John McCain and whatever thug John McCain chooses. There's a question of, I guess, incrementalism or something like that. Maybe that's the word we would use. No, I don't know. Well, we're not getting our great liberal hope on the ticket. But, little newsflash, there were no great liberal hopes on the ticket with the exception of Dennis Kucinich. And Dennis Kucinich was never going to be allowed to have an impact on the race or even a remote chance. No, no, no. No, you get a choice between A and B. C, D, E, F, and everything through Z is a bullshit diversion. Whether it's Ralph Nader or Bob Barr or Cynthia McKinney, whom I respect, or anybody else. Because you do not build third parties with presidential politics. I don't know why that is so hard to understand. It is. I mean, is there anybody out there who doesn't understand that it's going to be either Barack Obama or John McCain? Because I do understand that. And frankly, I know it may annoy some people, but a vote for anybody other than Barack Obama increases the likelihood of that. Well, no, that's not entirely true. A vote for Nader or a vote for Cynthia McKinney increases the likelihood of the election of John McCain. By the same token, I want all those pissed off libertarians to vote early and vote often for Bob Barr. Because, see, it's not going to be frisbees and wheat checks on January 20th if Obama is nominated, but it may damned well be sackcloth and ashes on January, elected. It may damned well be sackcloth and ashes on January the 20th if McCain is. Are we square? This is very serious business. Now, something I mentioned at the top of the hour that I thought we might discuss, and I really would welcome your thoughts on this. I welcome your thoughts on anything. Come on, if you're new to the show, that's the way this works. You, as the listener to the program, you, as a participant in the program, are every bit as or more important than anything I have to say, because this is about the dialogue that we're creating. And you're about that. If you're a regular to the program, you know that you can bring anything to the conversation that you want to. But with the announcement of Obama's running mate, I couldn't help but think a little bit, and I engaged in a dialogue over the weekend that was rather enjoyable about how we got to where we are and where it is exact. You know, where are we and why are we in this hand car? And first of all, there's the consideration of the vice presidency itself. I may have said this last week, but truly, and I don't know if nominees think about this way anymore, but the selection of a running mate is the political equivalent of writing a will. And will writing is hard if you take it seriously, because it is it's a document that speaks to what happens when you die. To the same extent, a vice president is chosen or should be chosen who will best reflect and carry out, just like in a will, the wishes of the person choosing the vice president. It's the political manifestation of a last will and testament. But now we're all horse raced up and you know, 24-hour news cycle celebritized up with the, well, you know, if he picked so-and-so, well, Tim Kaine could possibly deliver the state of Virginia. Evan Bayh could deliver Indiana. That's not why you pick a vice president. You pick a vice president because you understand, as the president of the United States, that we do have a history of some of our presidents dying in office either from natural causes or from unnatural ones, usually handgun wounds, sometimes long gun wounds. And you want to make sure that there's some sort of a reasonable transition away from you and into the hands of your vice president. You know what? I think in the case of Joe Biden, that it was the right choice as between Bi and Kane and Biden. Of those three, Biden is more likely to perpetuate the will and wishes of Barack Obama should something untoward take place. But then there's the issue of the issue of how the presidency got here on its own, all by the standalone issue. And as you know, at the time that the Constitution was framed, the executive the presidency was structured in such a way that whoever came in second became the vice president. And that immediately, that was probably the first thing that really showed up as a sign of trouble for the framers. Because on the one hand, you had, or on the first instance, you had Adams serving as Washington's vice president. And because Washington accorded extreme influence to Alexander Hamilton, who was nothing if not an elitist and a royalist, Hamilton effectively shut Adams out of any deliberations. Adams then becomes president in his own right, and the guy who came in second was, of course, Jefferson. And Jefferson Adams is not fond of Jefferson in the number two slot. Jefferson becomes president and gets Aaron Burr in the number two slot. And Aaron Burr, after years and years of calumny and just miserable right-wing filth coming from Alexander Hamilton, calls him out onto the plains of Weehawken, New Jersey, and puts paid to Alexander Hamilton's political career and every other part of any sort of a career. And they put Alexander Hamilton in the dirt. Aaron Burr goes a little bit nuts. He takes a trip down the Mississippi River that Thomas Jefferson then characterizes as an act of treason and rebellion. And so at that point, some of the framers who were still looking around going, this might not be working so well. And so eventually we get the amendment to the Constitution that says, no, we'll have a vice president who's chosen by the president. But if they had not done that, you cannot help. But look at the situation as it is and wonder, considering how close the election of 1960 was, can you imagine John Kennedy with Richard Pinhead Nixon? That's what Harry Truman called him. With Richard Pinhead Nixon staring over his shoulder as the vice president? Can you imagine Nixon with Hubert Humphrey staring over his? How about Ronald Reagan with Jimmy Carter staring over his shoulder? Or ultimately, how about the last 8 years with George Bush, or at least 2000 to 2001 to 2005? How about those 4 years with Al Gore kibitzing on George W. Bush? How about Al Gore in the vice presidency instead of Darth Cheney? One cannot help but be a little bit at least intrigued by that idea. And considering where we've come to here in Yea Verily, lo and behold, 2008, you can't help wondering if maybe the framers jumped, the people who amended the Constitution to change it, nature of the vice presidency, you can't help but wonder if they jumped the gun. Or at least, I can't help wondering. because as it is, well, Dick Cheney has redefined the vice presidency. He has turned it into a regency for an idiot president. And there have been principles established and precedents set that future presidents are going to be hard-pressed to get around. It's going to... And I guess that's one of that's kind of where I'm headed, is that we may not fully understand the effects of the W presidency for another generation or so. The degree to which our government has been warped beyond all its recognition in just the short span of 8 years is something that, we really, really, really can't fully comprehend yet. You know, will McCain, if McCain wins, will his vice president have as active a role as Dick Cheney? You know, they keep talking Tim Pawlenty, they keep talking about Romney and stuff. If, honest to God, if I was John McCain, I would be on bended knee begging kind of sleazy Rice to run with me. Because if she could be made to agree, you'd neutralize every, well, you'd neutralize a whole lot of no, you get the idea. But there's a whole lot of wait and see in all of this. Let's go to the phones. Hey, welcome to the program.
Good evening, Bob.
Hey, Ed.
How's it going?
Oh, I'm doing all right. How about you?
Did you ever get your friend straightened out on who's going to be that vice president?
How so?
Well, he had predicted... someone out of Virginia there.
Oh, yeah. Mark predicted Tim Kaine, and hey, I'm so happy. I am so glad that he was wrong.
Yeah, I am too, but I would have bet money that it was going to be Biden or Dodd, one or the other.
Or you mean by?
It almost had to be if he wanted to pick up anything.
Well, it would have... I don't think Dodd was ever in the mix, but, you know, like I said, if that's the three that we're looking at, you know, certainly none of those three would have been my answer for an honest-to-goodness, you know, liberal or progressive or whatever you want to call us, vice president. But if that's the three we've got to choose from, you know, my choice would have been Biden, too.
Mm-hmm. Well, how about let me ask you a question instead of making a statement. Is McCain allowed to pick Weasel Face or Joe?
Sure, he could. The only limitation on the vice presidency is that, at least theoretically, the president and the vice president are not supposed to be from the same state. Now, in the case of George Bush and Dick Cheney, they were, but Dick Cheney conveniently had a post office box in Wyoming. So that's how they got around that.
Well, I'm telling you, those sneaky rascals will find a way, won't they?
Yeah, I wouldn't trust them with a handful of, right.
I wouldn't either, but it wouldn't surprise me a bit that, cause everywhere you see old McCain, that, little weasel, you know what? He's even got the looks of a suck. You know what? He's got all the makings of a.
Yeah, one of those people who has no self respect, and will. He'd sell his own mother if the price was right.
Mm-hmm. Well,
I mean, look. That's why he sold out his first wife.
That's why he did what?
That's why he sold out his first wife.
Are we speaking of
McCain? McCain.
Oh, McCain. Okay. Yeah, I know he. I know he done her dirty, but I thought maybe Joe Lieberman had done the same thing.
No, I don't. I don't think he's got that much ambition.
Oh, you got the answers, I'll say that. But he is a little weasel. I just wanted to But I'm calling you. I called you to gouge you a little bit on.
Oh, yeah. Well, you know, like I said.
I know he's good for a gig.
Oh, yeah. And I took Mark at his word because, you know, there was talk about, you know, that Obama was traveling to Richmond and blah, 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 blah. And I really wanted, I wanted to be wrong, and I wanted Mark to be wrong about it. Because, Tim Kaine, like I said, if somebody had said, if some Republican had said something ugly about Tim Kaine, he probably would have just cried.
Hmm. Well, I'm going to tell you, you think, you made the statement that West Virginia would probably go McCain?
Yeah, I still say that.
I think Virginia's got more of a chance of going McCain than what West Virginia has.
Oh, no, Obama's within striking distance in Virginia.
He's what?
He's within striking distance. His poll numbers are not that far apart from McCain's in Virginia.
Yeah.
We got a long way to go here.
My son lives down there. Especially around those military bases and stuff.
Mm-hmm.
They're solid McCain.
Well, but wait a minute, Ed. Did you see that business about the donations? Who's donating to whom in the military?
No. Uh-uh.
Military donations to Obama are outstripping military donations to McCain by about 6-1.
My goodness. Well, my son, you know, my son is he's a salesman for Prime Equipment.
Mm-hmm.
And he delivers to NOB, that's your Naval Ordnance Base, and Langley Field and all of them. And he says that all of them are, that they say they're for McCain.
Well, that's not what the donations are showing.
Yeah. Well, and money talks, don't it?
Well, it sure does.
But I ain't going to take up your time. Somebody's probably got something in
place. No. It's no worries. Joe Manchin's going to be speaking at the convention sometime tomorrow. For those who are outside West Virginia, that's West Virginia's, so-called Democratic governor.
The first part of what you said.
Joe Manchin is speaking tomorrow at the convention.
Oh, yeah, well, I'll be sure to get up on time for that if I don't sleep past 2 o'clock. he's a disgrace to West Virginia. He really is.
But he's gonna turn it around. He's going to turn West Virginia around with 7 coal to liquids plants. Yeehaw. There won't be a drop of water fit to drink in this state by the time he's done if he gets his way.
Yep. He's got a monopoly on ignorance in this state like Bush has on the country.
Well, in many, yeah.
But, Bob, I just can't believe that West Virginians are dumb enough to put people like that in. But yet, if you are right about West Virginia going McCain, I won't never look back again when you tell me something. I'll believe every bit of it until it comes to pass.
Well, it could be turned around, but it's going to take a lot of concerted work and those people who were, you know, so hardcore for Hillary in this state are going to have to realize, and, you know, Hillary Clinton's already said it, Ed, they're going to have to realize that if they think that her policies and the reason they voted for her were valid, and then they have to vote for Obama.
I agree.
Except for the 20% in West Virginia that said they voted for Hillary because she's white. Those people we can't do anything about.
No. I'm glad I talked to you, or I probably wouldn't have voted. I wouldn't have voted at all for president. But no matter what, a 4-year-old shaved ape would beat George Bush. And that's why.
I think that's what he is in the first place.
Mm-hmm. But we're going to have to get together and talk some politics. You can probably get my head on straight.
Oh, I don't think it's not on straight in the first place.
Well, I happened to be right once. I called mail. I was going to leave him a message on who was going to be the pick of the vice president. He called me back. He said, yeah, I know. He said, I guess you picked him ahead of time. I said, well, call Bob Kincaid and ask him. And he ain't going to do it. He wouldn't even leave Dreamer.
Oh, really?
Nah. He ain't that good at it.
Is he still four square behind Russ Weeks?
Mm-hmm.
Well, next time you talk to him, ask him if you want to get behind somebody, why not get behind the Mountain Party candidate, Jesse Johnson?
He's made a commitment. And I said, Mel, you call yourself a Democrat. I said, a Democrat votes Democrat. And it almost come to, you know.
Hard feelings.
Things where it can fall out. You can fall out over something.
Well, I mean, for instance, I know, Ed, that our buddy Mel does not like mountaintop removal. I'm almost dead certain of that.
I know he don't.
Well, there's Russ Weeks. Russ Weeks hadn't seen a mountain. Russ Weeks has never seen a mountain he didn't want blown up.
Yeah, and Russ Weeks thinks minimum wage should be 50 cents. He's for a right-to-work law state. And he's just like old Steve O'Brien. He's for all sold out to the companies and the Chamber of Commerce. Probably a member of the Chamber. So I just can't. I told him, I said, Mel, I can't believe it. You're still calling yourself a Democrat. And go, well, I told him I would and that I would help him, and I'm going to keep my word. I said, well, sometimes it's worth lying for, probably. So I told him, I said, I'd back up on that one if I never backed up.
Bless his heart, Jesse Johnson. He's got all the he's got all the right ideas, and he's got all the right positions on the economy, on workers' rights, on the environment, everything. He's rock solid.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm not gonna have any qualms against going in and voting for him. Because we've seen how much a Democrat Joe is, you know.
I never. As much as he claims to be a Democrat, I can't believe that he's sold out to Russ Weeks. There ain't nothing to Russ Weeks.
Well, Russ Weeks is an idiot. That's why it made him so mad back when I was on the air in Beckley, Ed, when I referred to him as Russ Weeks minded. Because there's
got that right.
Yeah, there's just, you know, I mean, you can rap on that man's skull and you can hear the echo.
Well, I know he goes up to see Mel.
Yeah.
And he's, you know, he don't realize, Mel don't realize, but Russ Weeks is using him. So,
sure he is. He's a Republican. That's what Republicans do.
Yep.
And in the course of using him, he's also destroying. He's destroying any future political hopes that Mel might have.
Yeah, that's what I told Mel. I said, Mel, you're hurting your with good solid Democrats. When you did this, it'd be like Tom Bell did out over here when he lost out for the running for sheriff on a Democratic ticket. And then turn around and run on a Republican ticket. I said, nobody will vote for him at all now. And I said, that's what you're doing.
I think that's about the size of it.
But listen, I'll get off here and let somebody, pardon me, that's got something important to say.
Well, no problem, Ed. I'll put you back on hold and you can listen to the rest of the program, all right?
I sure appreciate that.
You take care and say hi to Dreamer for us.
I sure will, and you say hi to him all over there.
I sure will. We'll talk to you later.
Okay.
That's our good buddy Ed here in Fayette County. Politically astute, to say the very least. So that's the end of the second hour. We'll see what shakes out in the third one. In light of the Afghan wedding party story, our buddy Kid A from the chat room suggested this tune. So, why not? This is America's liberal voice. This is the Horn. Your home for Democratic convention coverage.
It's in the water. It's in the wind. It's where you go. It's where you've been. It's what you do. What you don't. It's what you will. And what you want. Snow-capped mountains. Moonlit path and ice cold showers, a long hard path. It's something waiting for you just a little farther down the line. You can't turn back now. You can't turn back now. It's too late to turn.
You're listening to WIN, the Workers' Independent News Service. I'm Jesse Russell.
One-fourth of all the delegates to this convention are union members, and as the presidential campaign kicks into a higher gear with this convention, it's organized labor that will supply much of the people power to mobilize the vote for the Democratic ticket. On Sunday, the AFL-CIO, Change to WIN, the National Education Association, the Colorado AFL-CIO, and the Denver Area Labor Federation all came together in a turnaround America rally to launch labor's voice at the convention. Change the Wind's Anna Berger will address the convention on Tuesday. Union delegates will be meeting at the convention to make sure that labor's agenda is well represented. Not only are one-fourth of the Democratic delegates union members, but historically roughly one-fourth of voters who make it to the polls are also from union households. In Barack Obama, labor has a presidential candidate who strongly supports the Employee Free Choice Act labor law reform that will make it easier for workers to form unions free of employer intimidation. Throughout this convention and into the general election, labor's voice will be heard loud and strong.
On Saturday, the presumptive nominee for the Democratic presidential ticket, Barack Obama, chose his vice president and Delaware Senator Joe Biden. How does organized labor feel about this pick? Well, if statements released by the country's two labor federations are any indication, they are very pleased. According to the AFL-CIO, Biden had a 100% voting record on issues important to working families in 2007. An overall record during his 35 years in Congress of 85%. On Sunday, AFL-CIO President John Sweeney issued a statement that said Biden is an eloquent defender of working families, an opponent of the Bush administration's war on workers. He said the candidate will be embraced by workers and union members. Change to Win President Anna Berger also issued a statement on Sunday calling the selection of Biden a great choice for American workers and labor. According to Berger, Biden has been a friend to working Americans throughout his public life, standing up and fighting alongside us for the right to organize, for living wages, for family medical leave, for workplace safety, and for a strong social security system. Biden is scheduled to speak at this week's Democratic National Convention in Denver on Wednesday at 9 p.m. Here's today's economic report. Less Labor Day travelers this year are expected to take planes or cars. A report from AAA suggests 83% of travel will be in cars, but that's a 1.1% decrease from 2007. Air travel is expected to be down 4.5% over last year, and the motorist agency expects to see a surge in bus and train travel of 12.5% in comparison to 2007.
You've been listening to WIN, the Workers' Independent News. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
Tonight's final hour of Head On begins now. 1-877-4-HEAD-ON. That's 1-877-443-2366. Here's Buck.
All right. Sorry about that, everybody. I had two pieces of audio rolling at the same time. I can't be trusted with sensitive audio equipment sometimes. God almighty. Oh, golly, Ned. That was just weird. But at any rate, got it solved now. And we are in the beginnings of the third and final hour of tonight's program. Assuming, of course, that we get everything technically squared away with Mark prior to 9 p.m., we will have Mark Levine sitting in for Peter Godbold, who is recovering from Hurricane Fay. We'll have Mark Levine sitting in at 9 p.m. Eastern Time, 6 p.m. Pacific. So that's on the way. You know the phone number, 877-443-2366, 877, the numeral 4, head on your nickel, 304-658-3333. Email rolls into bob@headonradio.com. And you are more than welcome, as I said, to bring anything to the discussion that you wish to bring. You know, this program is a constant learning experience for me. I am, and by learning experience, I mean really learning and having the little lights turned on for you. Because, you know, I'll go off and do one of my little redneck voices and, you know, talk about... some right-winger, like, you know, God knows I've seen enough of them around here. That Obama is a Muslim. And see, when you hear that, being a native English speaker and an American, or someone fairly familiar with American culture, you understand that I'm funning. You understand that I'm just playing. And frankly, folks in more or less Western culture pick that up as well. But I got an email over the weekend of someone who had apparently caught my show when I was fooling around and doing voices and so forth, who lives in Morocco. And I got to admit, I was initially taken aback when I saw it in my inbox, and I opened it up because it said, you know, it started out very politely, "Hello, I am, and I live in." And I read all the way through it, waiting for the part where they tell me that, you know, they need me to secret away, you know, the usual letter from either, they always all come from, claim to come from Kuwait, Saudi Arabia, or Nigeria. You know, the one that's going to make a millionaire out of you. And I thought, honest to God, and I apologize, but that's just the way our email culture is now. I thought it was spam. But in fact, it wasn't. It was a legitimate email from someone who had heard the program in Morocco and wanted me to understand more about Islamic culture, the Islamic faith, and sent me a lot of links about Islam, much of which I was already familiar with. You know, I've read the Quran, that kind of stuff. And I don't bear any ill will toward anyone for being Muslim any more than I bear anyone ill will for being a Jainist or Hindu or Buddhist or Christian or Jewish or animist or flying spaghetti monsters. So I tried to craft a very nice response letter. And I hope it was well received. But it was a reminder to me that not everybody is necessarily inside on the gag. So if you are listening and you are from outside the United States or Western culture generally or Western English-speaking culture generally, please understand that when I go off and do those little voices, that is generally parody or some attempt at wit. So yeah, there's that. All right, we're about 10 minutes into the hour, and I do need to take a break to try to get some of this technical stuff set back up with Mark Levine, who is standing by out at the Pepsi Center in Denver. So with that being the case, you know, our Monday anthem, as I said, has become Will Kimbrough's Horseshoe Lake. So let's see if we can let's all take a little trip to Horseshoe Lake. Lord knows I need one, and I'll see if we can get stuff cranking with Mark. All right, we'll be right back.
It won't work this morning. I can't punch in. Too many questions under my skin. I did like they told me, I'd settle down. I'm going crazy working down. Why do I stay? Who are all these people I check in with every day? I need room to think this over. I need to ride a horseshoe lake. I want to feel like it makes a difference. What difference one man makes? They say that one man. I don't need a shrink. I need some time away from all this. I need a drink. What do I do here? Where will I go? Why am I so haunted by anything that I don't know? Sober. I need a ride out to Horseshoe Lake. difference? What difference one man makes? They say that one man makes money, one man makes time. I need some time to think this over. I wanna make up my own mind. I need some time to think this over. I wanna make up.
Isn't that just soothing? Don't we just love Will Kimbrough? Well, like I said, that's our Monday anthem. It's our little mental health song. And I have a feeling we're going to need it, because if the technology works out as it's supposed to, and everything works out with Mark Levine out in Denver the way it is, again, supposed to, then here shortly we will be hearing from none other than Nancy Capitolosi, the woman who was too afraid to impeach, the woman who was too afraid to stop George Bush's the hellish occupation and slaughter in Iraq. And we will hear. I don't even know if she'll offer excuses. Well, I'll be curious to hear if anybody in the crowd has the nerve to boo her. So it remains to be seen. So you'll need that little calm down thing going on for you. Here we go. I hope. Mark, you have to dial in first, buddy. It's not just magic. This is hey, look, we play without a net. We do stuff that other broadcasters would not ever have the guts even to try. Hey, do you realize that everybody else who is sitting there in the Pepsi Center is using these $5,000 a pop hardware gizmos? And as a consequence of that, hold on a minute. Okay, well, Mark's rebooting, so we'll know what's going on here in just a second, and I'm gonna do the same too. Just, look, host, producer, fixer of things. Now, I don't know about you, but I'm pretty doggone impressed with me. And we'll find a way to lick all of this. So just one second and get things restarted. Be doing just fine. Now, Nancy Pelosi, well, you know, it'll be interesting to hear what she has to say. Because it is interesting to hear them dance and weasel around why they didn't do their damn jobs. I know the votes weren't there to get George Bush tossed from office. I understand that. They weren't there initially. Okay, I think I've got Mark now. But the sin is not in failing. The sin is in not trying. Okay, I see audio. Let's see if Mark's there. Hey, Mark. Mark, you're there.
Mark, can you hear me now?
Yeah, Mark. Mark!
I'm trying real hard.
Mark! Mark? Thank you. Okay, you there, Mark?
All right, I'll turn it down. I'm hot. I'll turn it down. No problem.
Ah, much better.
Way down. But I can't hear you right now. I can't hear you. I'm turning me down, and I can turn Nancy Pelosi up, and you can just play her until we have a break.
They're confident.
What happened to Nancy Pelosi?
The American dream for all Americans. But our journey to take our nation in a new direction cannot be complete without new leadership in the White House. Democrats know we can't afford any more the same failed Republican policy. Democrats stand for the change America needs. We stand for Barack Obama for President of the United States. Republicans say that John McCain has experience. We say John McCain has the experience of being wrong.
All right, you have me
and
you have Nancy.
Bush
policy, but I don't hear you. I'm going to turn off me and Nancy so I can see if I can hear.
All right. This is a little
bit. Turn me off because I wanted to hear you. Let me just hear you real quick so I know I can hear you.
Okay, we're on the air, Mark. So
it may not be necessary.
Okay, Mark, do you hear me? Are you there?
I mean, I can't hear you, but if that's okay, if you could just hear me, I'll turn up Nancy and we'll go from here. Here's Nancy Pelosi.
His own medical treatment to cast the deciding vote. Barack Obama is right. And John McCain is wrong. On a future of American independence, investments in renewable and clean energy, and millions of good-paying clean jobs here in America, Barack Obama is right, and John McCain is wrong. And on the most important foreign policy decision of our time, the war in Iraq, a catastrophic mistake that has caused thousands of lives and over $1 trillion.
All right, is that good?
As well as weakened our spending.
I can do whatever you want.
Okay, okay, Mark, Mark.
One at a time. First, let's do my mic.
Mark! Mark, are you there? Mark, are you there?
All right, you can hear me, right? Am I good now? Because I can't hear you at all, Bob. I can't hear you in the least. No, I can't hear you, Bob. But I'm glad you can hear me. I cannot hear you. I don't know why I can't hear you. I should be able to hear you, but I can't. So let's just go with me and Nancy. Let's just listen to Nancy, and then we'll do this. No, I didn't know this was on the air. Oh, my God. Let's just go back to Nancy Pelosi, then, and I'll get out of her way.
Well, once and for all, end our dangerous dependence on foreign oil and invest in renewable, clean energy. To make America stronger, America needs a president who will honor our troops and responsibly end the war in Iraq. For our children and grandchildren, America needs President Barack Obama. The night before I was sworn in as Speaker of the House, we had a celebration dinner at the Italian Embassy. In addition to proudly being the first woman speaker, I'm also proud to be the first Italian-American speaker. My little grandson, Ryan, who lived in Texas and at the time was 5 years old, was playing under the table. At one point, he came out from under the table, looked up, saw Senator Obama, and said, "Barack Obama, I must be dreaming." Barack Obama's dream is the American dream. He gives us renewed faith and a vision of the future that is freed of the constraints of the tired policies of the past, a vision that is new and bold and calls forth the best and the American people. Barack Obama's change is the change America needs. Whether in Illinois or Washington, Barack Obama has bridged partisanship to bring about significant reform. Barack Obama knew that to change policy in Washington, you had to change how Washington works. That means restoring integrity to government by reducing the influence of special interests. I saw firsthand his strong leadership on one of the toughest issues, enacting the toughest ethics reform in the history of the Congress. This was only possible with Barack Obama's leadership. Barack Obama's values are enduring American values. A belief in personal responsibility, in community, and hard work that brought him to the struggling neighborhoods of Chicago. A faith in God that gives him strength. A patriotic love of America that gives him courage. And his wife Michelle and his entire family inspiring him every day to strengthen and renew this great country. 115 years ago, a young woman named Catherine Lee Bates visited Denver. From the top of Pikes Peak, she looked across Colorado to the beautiful and bountiful golden prairies to the east and the majestic mountains to the west. That night, she returned to her hotel room, opened her notebook, and the words of America the Beautiful spilled from her pen. My favorite verse is the fourth. O beautiful for patriot dream that sees beyond the years. Today, Barack Obama is a 21st century patriot who sees beyond the years. As president, Barack Obama will renew the American dream. Barack Obama is the leader for America.
I guess this is the speech that you would expect Nancy Pelosi to deliver. It's kind of pablum-y, isn't it, Mark?
Organized and stronger than ever.
I can hear you now.
A new direction with Barack Obama and Joe Biden as President and Vice President of the United States. God bless you and God bless America.
Well, that ought to... Okay, that's it for Nancy Pelosi.
All right, I will turn Nancy Pelosi down. I'm sorry, Bob. I tell you, I was so busy working on the audio problems, I didn't hear a lot of her speech. I did hear one part, though, that you may have missed that was very good at the beginning, just where she got the whole crowd to say, you know, Barack Obama is one way, and then John McCain is another. You know, Barack Obama will give health care to every American. Well, John McCain, no. You know, the kind of call and response that's typical for a political convention. But I am here. I am back. I'm bringing you feed. And most importantly, for all our Horn listeners, that means that you will hear Ted Kaney's speech from beginning to end. That is my solemn word to you.
Very good. Very good indeed. Now, that's what I was saying about Nancy Pelosi's speech. It was just, it was like Gertrude Stein on Oakland, California, wasn't it, Mark? There was no there.
Honestly, I was busy working on the feed, Bob. It was standard speech.
Yeah. There you go. Now, you're sounding quite good, Mark.
Good. I'm glad, because I've been working on this audio for some time. I'll tell you this. To the folks that wanted video, I have to apologize. There will be no video this evening. However, I am not giving up the ghost. I am still hopeful that tomorrow, Wednesday, and Thursday, you will actually get video. It may not be good video, but you will get video from the convention hall showing Guy and me talking in our best. But go ahead, Bob. Okay, well, I'll tell you, I've been just worn out all day. I am going to fill in for Peter following Bob. But lately, I just got fed for the first time. I was busy snarfing that down while trying to fix the audio problems. I've been up since 5 in the morning. I don't expect anyone to feel sorry for me. I am very glad to be here. I'm very privileged to be here.
I'm sorry about that. I'm sorry about that, Mark. It just, you know, it's one thing after another here, so.
Hey, I know how it is.
That's what I meant by fill, please.
No, I knew what you meant. I filled.
Attaboy.
You go right ahead. This is still your hour. You take over, Bob.
Wow. Don't know how. Okay. Well, before you go, is there anything of any note between now and 9 p.m. as far as the feed audio is concerned?
I don't know when Teddy Kennedy's gonna be here. I'll stick around. I'll listen to you, Bob. I'm not necessarily going anywhere. I'll try to finish my sandwich. If I find something I want to.
No. Mark, that's not what I'm talking about. Go ahead and finish your sandwich. That's not a problem. Just do me a favor and kill your mic and turn up the feed audio, please.
No problem. Doing it now.
Thanks to his candidacy, I feel like the storm our country has weathered may be ready to pass. There is hope on the horizon. Nation, we can't afford 4 more years like the
last. I'm guessing
this
is Debbie Wasserman Schultz. It sounds like her.
The change we need, the hope we deserve, and the future we can build together.
No, it's not her. It's an African-American woman who I haven't heard of. I will get the schedule, and then I'll be able to let our listeners know who everyone is.
Okay. No sweat, Mark.
Hey, hang on. I just had a busy day. You should see the mess here. I'll have to show you sometime. Go ahead, Bob. I'll get the schedule. I'll let you know. Hold on.
We must never forget what happened to New Orleans.
Ah.
To help remember, we have a short film by Academy Award winner director June Beeler that illuminates the lessons of Katrina.
Well, well, well. How about that? Okay, well, trying to do... doing audio of video is deadly radio, so we won't be doing that, if that's all right. Yeah, okay, we're doing some technical stuff here, and the peanut gallery and the needling crowd in the chat room's having fun poking Bob with a sharp stick, yeah. God love you, John Fox, welcome to my world, Mark, snarfing and patching. And bless, yeah. Kid A sitting there waiting. Mark Levine would never Mark Levine has got too much class. He'd never pull a Bill O'Reilly. Phil, I don't know what Phil means. We'll do it live! You guys, if you only knew. Let's see, I think it took Guy James 3 hours to go 30 miles today or something like that because the Secret Service and the various and sundry... law enforcement agencies have traffic in Denver reduced to absolute insanity. Mark, running around trying to get... Okay, yeah, Margie Perez. Yeah. Jazz singer. Yeah. God. But that's the beautiful thing. This is happening, and this is kind of what you go through under these circumstances because it wasn't possible to tech any of this stuff out before today. So you're actually hearing something, and that's kind of philosophically in line with the horn in many ways, because a great deal of what we do involves pulling the curtain back. It's like the old business about a magician never tells his a magician never tells how his tricks are done. Well, the reason that a magician never tells how his tricks are done is because then the rubes would stop being rubes. Well, we have never, ever, from day one, considered the folks who shared their precious finite time with us to be undeserving of knowing how it works. And so we do show you how it works. And what's going on out there is that there's a feed, there's an audio feed coming from the podium, and Mark is bringing that through his board. Mark wants back on for a second. There you go, Mark.
Yeah, Bob, I know that it's a video, and you're not supposed to show video on radio, but this is the only thing that Jimmy Carter is doing, I think, at this convention. So it's mostly in his words or about him. I think people on the horn would want to listen in. So let's listen in. It's mostly Jimmy Carter, all right?
Sounds good, Mark.
To heal this country, that would be a high priority.
of the basic rights of the working people of our country, not just the super rich. There would be a rational approach made toward resolving other crises like the energy crisis. The Democrats are for the working people, for those in need, to improve their quality of life.
We had 23 feet of water, and we have been forgotten back here. But it's my hope and faith is to see my neighborhood come back better than what it was, because we did all of this.
I would say that the most redeeming feature of the aftermath of Katrina has been the indomitable spirit of the people who suffered most. They were abandoned by their governments. They took their own initiative. They didn't just sit back and wait for outside help. They welcomed tens of thousands of volunteers who came in as their partners when the government didn't do so. The community spirit has been an inspiration to me and my wife, Rosa, every time we've ever been here.
You have to put yourself out there. You have to say, I don't know the beginning to the end.
There are people all over America and looking forward to an opportunity with the government's partnership. And the change that needs to be made next year is to have an administration in Washington that genuinely cares about the American people and their lives at this time and their future.
You got to wonder, Mark, why didn't...
Oh, no. Here he is. Here is Jimmy Carter. Yes.
Okay, that's the question I was going to ask.
He wasn't on the program, but here he is.
Wonderful.
Jimmy Carter. I didn't know he was coming, but it sure brought the crowd to his feet because he was not on the program. The program just had the video. And now the crowd is pretty full. Every seat is full, it looks to me. Maybe some people standing in the aisle. Wow, even up in the high bleachers. I'd say we're about 90% full right now. You see Jimmy Carter and Rosalynn Carter coming out, waving to the crowd. People are waving American flags. Like I said, this is a real surprise. I don't think anyone knew he was coming here tonight. I think that answers your question, Bob, that you started to ask me, which is why he wasn't here. Well, apparently he was here. The video was mostly about Katrina. I think it was good that they brought it up, and it was a good person to bring it up. He's now wandering around greeting the people on the stand, greeting Nancy Pelosi and the others up there. And like I said, they're playing some music, which you're hearing in the hall. I'll turn the hall down just a little bit so you can hear me, because it's just, you know, cheering and music and all. But wait a minute. Maybe he's not speaking. He did go out. Wow. No, wait. He's not speaking. Oh, my God. Now, he came out, and people waved, but he didn't speak. We'll talk about that in a second, Bob, but first, now people are talking about Barack Obama. I'd like to play this as well.
Okay.
It's inspiring, absolutely inspiring, to see someone as brilliant as Barack Obama, as successful, someone who could have written this ticket on Wall Street. Take all of
Lawrence
the
Tribe talking,
all
professor
of the
at Harvard Law School,
devoted to the community and to making people's lives better.
When I came back, ran a voter registration project, Project Vote. We registered 150,000 new voters. I started teaching at the University of Chicago, teaching constitutional law.
The biggest blessing of my life is my family. I've got a wonderful wife, Michelle. We've been blessed with two beautiful daughters.
Faith is an important part of how we want to build our family. Our girls, Malia and Sasha, are the light of our lives. You know, they keep us grounded and whole. And what we are reminded of every day when we see them is that every child should be able to enjoy what they enjoy.
Okay, that was it. Just a short video.
Yeah.
The next speaker is going to be his sister, his half-sister, Barack Obama, Maya Sotero Ng. I don't think we've seen her hardly any at all on the campaign trail. Here she is. I don't think she looks anything like Barack Obama. Let me give you Barack's sister, Maya.
Okay.
You look good. It is an honor to be here. And it's been an honor to meet so many of you across this country and to hear your stories. Tonight I want to share a little bit of my story about growing up with my big brother, Barack Obama. A truly hard act to follow, I might add. When we were young, our family didn't have much in the way of wealth, but what we did have was far more important. We had people who made us believe that with a little imagination, we could dream the improbable. That through hard work, we could accomplish the extraordinary. That through the power of education, we could propel ourselves to a future far more promising than our circumstances led us to expect. Perhaps most importantly, we had our mother. I've thought of her often during this campaign and wish she were here to see it and to meet you. She was such a sturdy woman, an eternal optimist who understood that parents are our first and best teachers. She encouraged us to explore and ask questions and delight in unexpected discoveries and surprising answers. She brought us to telescopes and microscopes to remind us that there was a world, a vast world beyond our limited reach, and that we should sometimes have faith in what we could not see. Above all, she was a storyteller. She told us tales from history about heroism in the face of injustice, about beauty breaking through darkness. These stories suggested that our deepest humanity and happiness would be found by reaching out to, empathizing with, and working to serve others. In these interconnected times, we need such stories. Like our mother, Barack opened my mind and spirit to a broader world. He took me to festivals, museums, street fairs, introduced me to people from many different neighborhoods and backgrounds, and taught me about the importance of standing up for what you believe. I love to watch him in action, working with such commitment, really listening to people, bringing them together to solve their own problems. In these challenging times, we need those skills and that sense of unwavering responsibility. As a U.S. history teacher, I try to make our country's fascinating story leap from the page for my students. Woven throughout that history is the story of our capacity to hope and achieve even during the toughest times. Many of the children I taught in public and charter schools in New York City and Hawaii had never traveled beyond their neighborhoods for fear of feeling like outsiders. I wanted them to know that they had belonged to something greater. I wanted them to imagine wider, dream bigger, and reach higher, to realize that they had more power than they knew. That is what this nation gave to Barack, and that is what he wants for his daughter and my daughter and every single child in this country. Bountiful opportunity. It is a gift he has already given us in this campaign. I have seen it everywhere I travel, in people of every age, faith, background, and walk of life, reaching out to one another, staking their own dreams on what we do together in this election. And I know that when we elect Barack as president, he'll be there for you just as he's always been there for me. I know he'll help you realize your dreams just as he's helped me realize mine. I know we'll make our mothers proud, and together we'll leave for our children a better, stronger nation. Thank you and good night.
Thank you.
Next on the schedule is Barack Obama's high school teacher in Hawaii. We'll hear, I guess, what Barack Obama was like in high school. Here we go.
Delegates and guests, please welcome to the podium Congressman Jesse Jackson Jr. from the great state of...
Oops. That's a problem with following the schedule. I guess we skipped the teacher. I'm not sure why. But here we go right to Jesse Jackson Jr., Congressman from Illinois.
I'm sure that Dr. King is looking down on us here in Denver, noting this is the first political convention in history to take place within sight of a mountaintop. On the day that President Johnson submitted the Voting Rights Act to Congress, he said, at times, history and fate meet at a single place, at a single time, to shape a turning point in man's unending search for freedom. So it was at Lexington and Concord. So it was at Appomattox. So it was in Selma, Alabama. Tonight, I would add, and so it shall be in Denver, Colorado, with the nomination of Barack Obama to be President of the United States of America. What a remarkable thing it is that a man who came to this convention 4 years ago as the keynote speaker is returning this year as our party's nominee. But for those of us who've known Barack over his decade in public office in Illinois, the yearning for change, the hunger for unity that he's tapped into across this country has a familiar ring. I remember when Barack first decided to run for the United States Senate. He had a remarkable career in the state Senate, reaching across the aisle to put a tax cut into the pockets of working families, to expand health care for more children and parents, and to take on lobbyists who had so much influence in Springfield. But despite this record, most in Springfield didn't take his candidacy all that seriously. The party establishment was skeptical of this young...
We're going to cut away from Jesse Jackson a bit. I know Bob wants to say goodbye, but he's promised to stay in...
Mark,
so you'll hear
Mark. It's a quarter till, so we don't have to interrupt the programming until we get to the top of the hour there to begin Peter's programming. So let's just go back to the audio for a little bit.
Sorry. Okay. All right. Fair enough.
That race wasn't going to be decided in the halls of power in Springfield or on the lakefront high rises. It was not going to be decided by the power brokers or the opinion shapers. It was going to be decided by the people of Illinois. Illinois is America. America, we need you to be with Barack Obama. It's great cities and small towns. It's old factories and new industries. It's timeless Midwestern values of faith, of family and hard work. And it's black and white, Latino and Asian, all living together as one Illinois family, as one America. And the people of Illinois were hungry for change. From the old factory towns of our industrial north to the farms of our agrarian south, families had been struggling to make ends meet in this global economy. And more often than not, they've been harmed rather than helped by economic policies that fail to help them get ahead and reach their dreams. But what they heard from Barack as he traveled across the state was a message of hope. Whether he was upstate or downstate, whether he was talking with folks who'd been laid off and seen their jobs shipped overseas, or struggling families to keep up with rising costs, whether he was talking with recent immigrants who wanted to know that America had a place for them too, whether he was talking to African Americans who were falling further and further behind, Barack spoke of a powerful idea. The idea that's at the heart of who Barack is. The idea that at the heart of who we are as Americans. And the idea that's at the heart of this campaign. That we all have a stake in each other. That the well-being of the we depends upon the well-being of the he and the she. And that in this country, we rise and fall together as one people, as one nation. And what I saw in this campaign is what I'm seeing today. Ordinary men and women of all races, all religions, all walks of life coming together to demand a government in Washington that is as honest and decent and responsible as the American people. Fellow Democrats, this is a historic moment. I know. I grew up with the lessons of another generation, the Selma generation, my father's generation. I know his stories of struggle and sacrifice, of fear and division. I know America is still a place where dreams are too often deferred and opportunities too often denied. But here's what I also know. I know that while America may not be perfect, our union can always be perfected. I know that what we can achieve when good people with strong convictions come together around a common purpose. And I know what a great leader can do to help us build common ground. America, we need such a leader who can heal the wounds of the last 8 years, a leader who knows that what unites us is greater than what divides us. America, we need Barack Obama in the White House. I know Barack Obama. I've seen his leadership at work. I've seen the difference he's made in the lives of people across Illinois. And that's why I know, for the sake of our children, for the sake of our families and the future we hold in common, he is the leader we need right now. 45 years. So the day after a young preacher called out, "Let freedom ring." In this fourth week of August, in this mile-high city, Democrats, freedom in America has never rung from a higher mountaintop than it does today.
Just showed a photo of Joe Biden, our vice presidential nominee, who was clapping and the crowd let out a roar. Well, Bob, while they're playing music and cheering.
I really like that song.
Are you serious?
I love that song. I'm not saying I want us to play it, but I love the song. It's a great hook.
Well, the crowd is it's as full as it's going to get tonight, I'm sure. People are clapping, lots of American flags, and that's really all you see. And a few Obama signs, mostly American flags, people standing up clapping. Right now there's the video of the people clapping. It's kind of the crowd watching itself, listening to the music. Maybe they're gathering up the next people. What did you think of Jesse Jackson's speech?
I thought it was quite good. I love the, you know, with Inside of a Mountain reference. That was very artfully done.
The reason why the crowd let out a roar, they're now showing Joe Biden on the main screen, and he lifted his thumbs up, and the crowd is really cheering. They really like Joe Biden.
I think of the three who were said to be the short list, he's by far the most engaging.
Well, I have to apologize to Horn listeners for guessing incorrectly. I had predicted Tim Kaine. This will be my formal apology. I'll tell you this, though. I'm much happier with Joe Biden.
Oh, I breathed a huge sigh of relief that it wasn't Kaine or Bi.
Well, Bi was really far to the center and even a little bit to the right for a Democrat. Biden, with the exception of the credit card industry, is pretty solid, and I think that's just because he's from Delaware.
I'm trying to sort something out here, and you never know, Mark, how much of this is, the hype of the for-profit media. But I just had something roll in from the Rocky Mountain News. Authorities are investigating a possible threat against Obama. Aurora, Colorado police today arrested a longtime drug user, two other accomplices were also arrested, and the police found four weapons, including two rifles, two handguns, one of them being a so-called sniper rifle.
That's very interesting. It's four guns, because I heard a story this morning. There was a guy from Wyoming who was carrying four guns. I'm wondering if it's the same story. I don't think it is. Because apparently he tried to go into Nancy Pelosi's hotel, and they evacuated her and arrested him.
Well, there have been no charges of attempting or wanting to harm Obama filed yet. But the guy was in a rented Ford rented pickup truck with these other two possible accomplices, and. The arrest then led authorities to a second man staying at the Cherry Creek Hotel at 600 South Colorado Boulevard in Glendale.
I was just there. I was at that hotel. I was there yesterday. When did this happen?
Yesterday.
What time?
Doesn't say.
I was at the Cherry Creek Hotel on 600 South Colorado Boulevard much of the evening. People are cheering loud again just because they're showing Joe Biden, and he's giving a big smile.
Well, it says that when authorities knocked on the man's hotel room door, he jumped out of his sixth floor window, landed on an awning, and then ran from the scene. And they found him with a broken ankle, and he was arrested too.
Oh my God, that's amazing! He jumped out of a sixth floor. That reminds me of no one other than John Wilkes Booth. Jumped from Abraham Lincoln's perch at the Ford Theater after shooting him, and actually hurt his leg at the time.
And the other thing that I've been following earlier today, Mark, is that Cindy Sheehan was in Denver for the march there,
right?
And she got back to her hotel to find her hotel room door and a guy fiddling with the phone with a screwdriver in his hand.
Sitting where?
He was in her hotel room.
Her room?
Yeah.
How did he get in her room? I guess he asked for a key.
Yeah. So there's a lot of speculation that probably her room was being bugged.
And what did she do, run away quickly and get hotel security?
She went and complained to the front desk, and they said something about, it's being reported over at opednews.com, about having, we were having some technical difficulties. Well, you, Mark, this is a pretty tech-savvy operation. You don't go after a phone with a screwdriver anymore.
I know. Clearly, he was bugging her room. I got to know when that hotel, though, because the purported assassin of Obama, and it sure sounds like they was. People don't jump out of a six-story window when they're, you know, just carrying their guns around. I want to know when that happened. I was at that very hotel. I can even give you the time. I was there because I know I was there to pick up my delegate passes.
Says this arrest went down Sunday afternoon.
I was there at 7 p.m. I was there 7 until 9:30. You mean all that happened at that hotel and then I arrived at 7? There was no security anything that I saw.
Well, the two of the guys were arrested as a function of a traffic stop, and that led to this guy at the Cherry Creek Hotel.
When, does it say when he was arrested?
It says Sunday afternoon.
Okay, well, I was there Sunday at 7, so, wow. I was at that very hotel. Amazing. Had no idea anything happened.
And it says the Rocky Mountain News also reporting that police found a rifle in the man's pickup and, of course, the obligatory bag of meth. And that the man started making comments about Obama, but law enforcement isn't releasing what those comments were.
Well, it sounds very clear that this man hoped to be a John Wilkes Booth for a Lee Harvey Oswald. I tell you, it's times like these you're thankful for the Secret Service. You know, I mean, I don't know who's bugging Cindy Sheehan.
Well, the thing is, the Secret Service didn't stop this, Mark. This was a routine traffic stop because dude was weaving in his pickup truck.
No, but and he was found with the four guns. How did he get to the Cherry Creek Hotel?
That was another guy. The arrest of the two guys in the truck led to the arrest of the guy at the Cherry Creek Hotel.
Oh, so guys in car at routine traffic stop, new guy in hotel.
Right.
Wow. Wow, this is a story. I think it's pretty big news. I mean, this.
Well, I would like to. I'd like to have more information, but it's still fairly sketchy.
Well, it's very, very new. Obviously, I'll ask around up here and see what I can find out. But it sounds like, I mean, people in this hall certainly don't know about it.
Well, I tell you what, Mark, stand by. I'm going to close the show out, and then we'll be back with Peter's intro, and we'll continue coverage. All right?
Sounds good.
Stand by, please. All right, everybody, we'll close out my program, and I'll be back with Mark here just in a minute, sitting in for Peter Godbold, recovering from Hurricane Faye. Thanks for joining in on this. Please don't go away. We have tons of convention coverage yet to come all week long. The only fully independent coverage of the convention you're likely to find on the Internet or the radio, dare I say. God knows, there ain't none on TV. So many thanks, as ever, to everybody who makes the horn go, and thanks especially to Coal River Mountain Watch. Go to coalriverwind.org and help us save Coal River Mountain. And, of course, always, 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 RMR, Gina, it's all for you.